man. There's a beverage here, huh?
Does anybody here know how many times I've had to watch Funny Lady?
I'm gonna get that gun of mine, and I'm gonna change you from a rooster to a hen with one shot.
Yo, 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 how's it going? And welcome to another episode of Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ify Wadiway, and I am in the booth, the virtual booth, with my friends. Y'all got scared for a second. Y'all like, uh-oh, he breaking the team. No, I'm not. First friend in the booth. You know him. You love him. We got Alonzo Duralde. Alonzo, what's good?
Oh, Ify, I'm not quite sure if this is good as much as it's requiring of attention, but trips to the grocery store. Like, I used to just pop in when I felt like it, grab four things, go home. You know, I would hit the Ralph's on 3rd and La Brea on my way home from the Max Fun Studios, and we would record there. But now that I go once a week, it has become like a major like moment of sort of strategy and planning. I got to make sure that like if there's only a couple things left on the shelf that I grab that first before somebody else takes the last red onions, just for instance. I got to make sure that the packaging that I'm taking off the shelf isn't like split open somewhere because, you know, I think look, the grocery store people have their hands full, and yeah, y'all are all doing an amazing job. But obviously, you know, there's a lot going on. They don't have the eye on the tiger they might usually do. So just all I know is that when I go to the grocery store now, which I still love doing, even though it's an ordeal, I have to really have my head in the game. I can't just sort of breeze through it anymore. So it's become a thing that requires focus and attention, and that's not a bad thing. So I'm going to say that's good.
It's a nice perspective. I like Ralph's as the Thunderdome.
Oh, yeah. That other voice you heard. That Ralph's gang. Rowdy Ralph's gang member. Is Drea Clark. Drea, what's good?
I feel like a grocery store gang is the one that I would be in, so that tracks. what's good with me, and that was partially inspired by revisiting the film we're talking about today, is an online, a web comic, as they used to be called, that I was obsessed with for a few years and then went back to and was delighted he's still writing every single day. It's called Questionable Content. It is just questionablecontent.com. It's been going since 2003. And it takes place, it's about romance and robots. And it takes place at a fictionalized version of Smith College. Shout out to Ingu King. But they call it, much like Ify, they call it Smif, S-M-I-F College. And so it's all like the kind of just queer-based, super diverse liberal haven, but with like mad rowdy robots sprinkled in. And he honestly, every single day, Monday through Friday, since 2003, has been writing Questionable Content. And if you check it out, I would recommend going to the archives, just scroll back like so many, like a thousand episodes, and then start there, because each page takes like 10 seconds to read, and it is a narrative through line, and you'll want to get into it. It's great.
I love a webcomic. Webcomics are still alive, y'all. Webtoon.com. They're creating webcomics all the time, and a webcomic just recently got made into an anime on Crunchyroll. Tower of God was based off a webcomic. So, yeah, keep peeping them. And that was like such a perfect, you know, tidbit for me to add for this episode, which we'll get into later after I introduce our last guest, my friend, my confidant, in the group chat together. She's a comedian. She's a writer on a little Netflix show that you're going to be checking out next year. Co-host of my other podcast, Nerdificent. She's does so much. She's done all the historical roasts. She's been partnered up with me on Tournament of Nerds. This is Dani Fernandez. Dani, what's good?
Ooh. Thank you. I just wanted you to keep going listing all my credits.
I was, but we already take too long for things.
She's a Disney character. She's hosted with E. I'm just kidding. this is really easy. Just pull up my IMDb. What is good with me is I actually, if you know that I'm a horror baby to the core, and last night I was watching Cursed Films on Shudder. I love lore. I love haunted lore. And they kind of just went into the one that I always knew growing up was The Crow. There was so much behind The Crow as far as it being cursed, but also Poltergeist, like, you know, actors, the set, like they also covered what was another one I watched last night? They have The Omen on there, just productions that have been thought of as cursed.
Did they do The Shining?
They didn't do The Shining.
Well, they have a whole documentary, so I imagine they're like, this is a dry noodle.
Oh, and The Exorcist. The Exorcist is also, see. But yeah, and so I was just like,
Twilight Zone too, I think, right?
Twilight Zone is on there. I didn't watch that one.
yeah, I hear
didn't watch that one.
A warning on the Twilight Zone when apparently you see the thing that happens. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of things I could say about things about that. But yeah, cursed films. I think Shudder gave away like 30 days in quarantine or whatever that you can watch like for free on their thing. So I'm actually trying to pick up a lot of my horror gaps. Because, you know, we all love like The Shining, Exorcist, Omen, you know, the Halloween, Freddy, like all of that. But I'm like, what are the gaps that I have in horror that I can like track down now? So that's what I've been doing.
Ooh, yeah. I know it's, I love that, you know, all of us folks who like talk about media have been using quarantine to be like, let's fill in the gaps of things that we miss. Like, I went back on Hayao Miyazaki and I'm going back. You're doing the horror thing. And I'm glad that Shudder's free for whoever wants that. I won't be partaking in that, but I do definitely suggest if you are a masochist, go ahead and check out that horror.
So, Iffy, since you're just going to flaunt your other podcast in our faces like this, what's good?
Oh, man. What's good with me is I kind of want to, because since we don't do It a Dick, we're doing This is Your Movie Life, I kind of want to do a quick open the floor, quick one, because the discussion has been brought up about drive-in movies, and I have not been able to stop thinking about that since it was brought up, and I want to know what everyone's thoughts are, because I think that's a good little movie news and a light at the end of the tunnel. But I was thinking about it, I was like, because everyone buys their ticket online, it'll be contactless, but we still need those, you remember the boxes that you need to watch drive-in movies. So,
oh, Iffy, welcome to the 21st century. They don't have the boxes anymore.
How do you do it? They give you a radio dial.
It's FM radio frequency that you tune into.
So in theory, like, if people leaned into the drive-in lifestyle, I mean, I'd love to have who chime in. Can we do this? And if this is available, would y'all go to a drive-in?
I would go to a drive-in without a quarantine. I love a fucking drive-in. Excuse me.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of the Mission Tiki in Montclair, California. That's still open, and I get their email every week. They've been showing, you know, Trolls World Tour. They've got Raiders of the Lost Ark
right now,
like a whole bunch of stuff. Yeah. So yeah, I was already a fan, and if my car were up to the drive to Montclair, I would be going there. But I'm totally for it as long as everybody's following the rules in terms of staying in your car and distancing. And I'm sure they've figured out some way that you can buy concessions and, you know, at a not get too close to anybody. But yeah, by all means, let's do it.
We're here to talk movies. This is the show where we talk movies. And today we're talking about Your Name. And we're also going to take a call from the Who Shot line. And of course, we have our staff picks. But first, it's time for our segment, This Is Your Movie Life. I do that worse every time.
You do.
Also, with movie production halted and movie release dates getting pushed back, our news sources for It Addict are drying up like a noodle. So in the coming weeks, we will take a voyage through our lives and discuss the films that have shaped who we are today. Since this is our fourth week of the segment, we're going to be discussing the pivotal college years, our ages 18 to 22. So we'll start with Danny. What was your movie during that time? Like, what movie shaped who you were?
Well, so this movie came out before I was 18, like several years before, but like it became like a cult thing with my friends and I. And that movie was A Cinderella Story. And that, I was going to also say She's the Man, which I don't know if it's problematic or not. It's such a good movie with Amanda Bynes.
Oh, yeah.
But I just remember, so those movies came out before I was in college. It was like when I was in high school. However, I don't know what was going on with my friends and I that we were just so obsessed with these rom-coms and Chad Michael Murray and what's his face with the hot body.
And Channing Tatum.
Yes, Channing Tatum. And She's the Man. I loved it. I think I loved like the rom-com nature of it. My girlfriends and I, like at that point, all had our college boyfriends and that none of them worked out with. And it was just this like dumb fantasy forever 21, like just so peak that time before we switched over into the time that we kind of are in now. But I still quote it all the time. One of my favorite quotes is, he's on the football field and his dad, who's the coach, is like, Austin, you're throwing away your dream. And Chad Michael Murray looks back at him and he's like, no, dad, I'm throwing away yours.
Isn't that...
I just like adore that.
Wait, isn't that also in Varsity Blues with James?
No, Varsity Blues is
the I don't want your laugh.
Your laugh. I don't want your laugh.
James Vanderbeek, you're right. A similar similar sentiment.
Dude, I adore those cheesy ass lines. I adore it.
Yeah.
That makes me want to write a rom-com and just put the cheesiest shit
in it. Please do. I love those. A Cinderella Story is also one of my favorites. There's always, you know, it's even into the Superman thing, but it's a Cinderella Story. It's egregious that Hilary Duff, her big thing, like the big dance version of the ball, she goes and literally has like this very thin filigree eye mask. And everyone's like, who is that? And I'm like, that's the girl you go to school with every single day.
All right, Lonzo, what you got? What you got? Actually, I like going Drea next. Sorry,
Lonzo. Oh,
I batted you
fine.
Up.
Fine.
Oh, my
fine.
God. Age before beauty. Wait.
Pearls before swine.
I insulted myself with that. Okay, so this one for me, obviously, every era, there's a lot of movies that could be possible. This one was notable. I spent my junior year at the University of Warwick in England and was studying film and English literature and was near Stratford-on-Avon. It was a real big Shakespeare gal. I'm sure none of these super cool elements of myself come across these days, but it's very real. And Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet came out around this time, and I was obsessed with it. I saw it while I was traveling in like 7 different countries. I kept going to see my cultural intake of all of these new countries was going to see the same movie in English, but I didn't care. It was romantic. It had freaking the casting. I mean, obviously your leads were amazing. Obviously, but I love John Leguizamo as Tybalt,
yes.
Harold Perrineau as Mercutio,
yes.
And, like dressed up like a drag queen and doing ecstasy. Like I loved the take of it, and then it was they kept the same language, you guys, that movie.
Yes.
And then when I got back to America, I got these enormous like 6 foot by 3 foot promotional posters that took up my entire wall of Romeo and Juliet. Cause super cool. I've always been super cool.
Oh yeah. No, I love that movie too. I like, that's been my first taste. Baz Luhrmann has had a big part of my life, from Romeo and Juliet, which they showed me, I think it either in middle school, early high school. And I just was in. Leo Dio was on the top of his game at the time. So, you know, so when he was on screen, we were there, and then it was using the language. So we were learning like the actual like script of Romeo and Juliet.
Do you bite your thumb at me, sir?
Yes. Oh my gosh. It was so good. And then after that, my stepsister was so obsessed with Moulin Rouge.
I just watched, Strictly Ballroom. I did a Netflix party with my friends, and I mean, that, talk about a gap. I hadn't seen that.
I want to dance in the Pan Pacifics with Tina Spackle.
Yes, it was iconic. I was just like, and Abuela is spicy, and like her dad, and I was like, wow. Anyways, you should watch it.
Oh, I didn't know Baz Luhrmann was hot.
He is. He's got some Alonzo hair too.
Yeah. No. I was like, okay. The zaddy train has
added a new station.
More full. at a new station. Yeah. There's a new car on the Zaddy train. All right, Alonzo, speaking of Zaddies.
So my college years really kind of coincided with peak John Hughes. I think I mentioned in the high school segment that 16 Candles came out the spring of my senior year when I was 16. So like, you know, but college was like, that was Breakfast Club, that was Ferris Bueller, you know, like all of that stuff. So I always think of those movies as being very much my college years. And weirdly enough, for another callback to one of Drea's childhood favorites, college is when I sort of rediscovered Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory and kind of appreciated it as a non-child for the first time. I was like, oh, this shit's dark. But if I had to peg one movie, it would probably be Robert Altman's Nashville, because I went to college in Nashville. Right. So I was living there and I was, you know, I wasn't immersed in the like world of country or anything, but I had a tiny pivot towards the music industry because I did college radio, and so I knew a lot. There was a really happening kind of indie, you know, pop rock band scene at the time. So like that movie, I really got into, and it kind of opened the door to Altman for me. Even though, again, while the 80s was peak John Hughes, it was anything but peak Robert Altman. It was sort of that post-70s period where like he'd made too many expensive flops, and so he was suddenly doing like these really small like theatrical adaptations, like, you know, Streamers and Secret Honor and Come Back to the Five and Dime Jimmy Dean. But you know, I was definitely kind of voraciously looking for that stuff, and then also sort of digging back into the older films. Like, I remember when Fool for Love came out, that was a big deal because I had seen so many regional theater productions of that Sam Shepard play, and Altman was directing the movie, and Shepard was the lead in it, and it was released by Canon Films, so it was just a trifecta of awesome right there. So I would say like Nashville is definitely like that's my college movie.
Would you have seen that in like an art house cinema?
I saw it in a film class, actually. Okay. Like there weren't a lot of them where I went to school, and in fact, I had to make up a major that sort of squoze in as much like film content as I could. But luckily, there was one that I could take, and as part of his sort of like overall, you know, history of cinema, we watched Nashville. So the first time I ever saw it was on VHS on one of those big screen TVs with like the three color in projector things. Yeah, well, it was in the media lab or whatever. Okay. So I lived there, but it was definitely like, you know, not optimal, but it was good enough.
Iffy, how about you? What were you doing in 2002 or whatever? I started to,
for every one of these segments, I would like look up the stuff that came out this year and like see, but there's no choice. If we're talking about movies that impacted my life in these college years, senior year, I joined Comedy Sports High School League. I learned about short form improv. I was in As You Like It, playing Duke Senior. So I was finally crystallizing, like wanting to be an actor, comedian. My dad still not approved, and no one in my family still was. Everyone was just thinking it was going to be like a side thing. Like, it's the funny thing when like your family doesn't understand passion and they think that, oh, if we just keep telling him no, he'll stop doing it. I was like, no, I'll just fuck off in college until I can do what I want. And that's just exactly what I did. But at one point, my mom, who like always has been like supportive of my artistic endeavors, so like she had no idea where to start for this son who's always wanted to act, but she was like, hey, because I remember the teacher who was the student advisor of High School League was like, hey, if you want to still do improv when you're done, you should. I have an indie team that I do in Orange County. And so my mom, like when she just saw me screwing around, she was like, hey, how about you just, the one thing I remember you being passionate about was improv, how about you hit him up and join the team? And I did an audition. They picked me up, and I remember they were like, have you seen The Big Lebowski? And I was like, no. They're like, well, you need to see The Big Lebowski because that's the only way you'll understand our humor. And I watch it and immediately fall in love. Like, the Coen brothers were the first, I guess, like artsy directors I fell in love with, because I saw Big Lebowski and I was like, they can do no wrong, even though Lady Killer scared them away from black people. So like I was on board. I watched like Big Lebowski back to back, and it is still one of my favorite movies of all time. It's a movie I can have on in the background, and just like it's so fun, and it just kind of dominated my life, and it kind of it did in a way at the time like influence my humor, which is just like non sequitur comments, committing, over committing to trivial things, which honestly in a way is kind of good if you want to do like good long form improv, because like it when you start to really understand improv theory, all the characters, the way they commit to who they are and the things they believe in is how you should approach every improv scene. Like, yeah, you should finish your coffee because you believe that your friends died face down in the muck for your ability to do it. That is a good commitment to your improv scene. All right. Well, that was really fun, but we got to keep this train rolling. So we're going to take a break and we'll be right back after we hear from another show from Maximum Fun.
Hi, I'm Renee Colbert.
I'm Alexis Preston.
And we're the hosts of the smash hit podcast, Can I Pet Your Dog? Now, Alexis.
Yes.
We got big news.
Uh-oh.
Since last we did a promo, our dogs have become famous.
World famous.
World, like...
stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Second big news.
Mm-hmm.
The reviews are in.
Mm-hmm.
Take yourself to Apple Podcasts. You know what you're going to hear? We're happy.
It's true.
We're a delight, a great distraction from the world.
I like that part a lot.
So if that's what you guys are looking for, mm-hmm. you got to check out our show. But what else can they expect?
We've got dog tech, dog news, celebrities with their dogs, all dog things.
All the dog things. So if that interests you, well, get yourself on over to Maximum Fun every Tuesday.
Back to Who Shot Ya. I'm your host, Ify Wadiway. In the virtual stew with me are
Drea Clark,
Danny Fernandez,
Alonzo Duraldi.
And today we're talking about your name. Alonzo, do you mind providing us with a quick synopsis?
I don't think so. No, not for this movie. This you have stumped the band, your name, and so I'm going to go to IMDb because I think otherwise it would be very crazy making. Okay, here's what we got. Mitsuha and Taki are complete strangers living separate lives until they suddenly switch places. Mitsuha wakes up in Taki's body and he in hers. This occurrence happens randomly and they must adjust their lives around each other, yet somehow it works. They build a connection by leaving notes for one another until they wish to finally meet. But something stronger than distance may keep them apart.
That is a good one.
It is. Yeah, that is a good one. I know. I think straight up we're going to decide. We going to spoil, because the it's a twist as to why they're kept apart.
Yeah, it's a 4-year-old movie. I think we're allowed to spoil
it. Yeah, we could do it. Okay, so this is
if you haven't seen your name, stop now and come back, please.
Yeah, come now. You can go check it out. This is the highest grossing anime film of all time. So why do you think that is? Like deep theory too, Alonzo. I'm curious.
Wow. Hard to say. I mean, you know, like I read an interview with the director where they were sort of asking him if he was sort of trying to explore any kind of trans or LGBT themes in the film. And he was like, no, this is really more kind of a traditional Japanese body switch, like, you know, Ranma 1-2 kind of thing. So I don't know if it is that it sort of plays around with kind of romantic heartbreak and kind of body switch farce at the same time, that it deals with sort of grand destiny, like, you know, a meteor shower plays a huge role in the fates of these characters. It's certainly gorgeously animated. I mean, from the way that they do Tokyo to like the serene countryside, like just all the visual detail is so great. We had that recent conversation about food and movies, and holy crap, this is another guy like Miyazaki that makes every rice ball and fried egg just like, ah, you know. I don't know what chord it struck exactly. It's hard for me to say, but, you know, I just think that it is a haunting movie about love and about loss. And I think it also sort of, it operates in this wonderful dream logic where, it's funny, they just announced today the
Celine and Julie Go Boating is coming to Criterion Channel in May, and I will be talking a lot more about that on this show. But in the meantime, like, it, both of these movies operate in this way where at first you're like, okay, what is going on? And then they start explaining it, and it has the logic of a dream, and it has the thing of when you wake up from a dream and you can't really remember what it was, and you get onto its vibe and you are totally immersed in it, and it's only when somebody else asks you to explain it to them that it becomes impossible.
I feel like for me, it is an intangible of why this connected with so many people, an intangible connection, whatever. But I do think, in hearkening back to my own connection to Romeo and Juliet at that age, there's something about romance. And Alonzo mentioned that in your explanation as well. But romance to that really grand epic proportions. And I think for younger audiences, there's an aspirational quality to that of like thinking about love as being something. Like, it's when you're young enough to think that there's just the one, you know, like that there's a single entity or person for you. Like, that is such a youthful concept. It comes before you start getting into relationships and saying things to your friends like, I love them, but, you know, it's really hard. Like, that's not fun and romantic and fanciful. And Your Name is about the promise of the romance and the destiny and the epic qualities. And then because it is filtered down to these everyday teens who are just both, you know, it's that the grass is greener. She lives in this like remote countryside and he lives in Tokyo, and both of them see things about the other's home that they don't appreciate about their own. Like, he thinks the country is so beautiful and she thinks the city is sparkling and wonderful. So there's just that idea of, I think at any age, particularly when you're young, but that idea of the hope and optimism of the world seen through the idea of connection and what's not yours. There's just a poignant longing all throughout this that reverberates with people because it's available in so many different parts of this story.
For me, if I would say that it's like peak, this is peak high school anime. Like, that to me is what latches on. Like, the gender bending is also very common in anime, as an anime trope. And I just feel like the whole, it hits so many iconic like anime scenery for me. Like, of course, the busy city of Tokyo and then the rural Japan and just the romance, yes, but also like so many factors in it of like, I now have boobs and I have, you know, like here's this dick. And like, it reminds me of like peak high school, the awkwardness, the like wanting to go on a date, but you're super awkward. I feel like that's so ingrained into a lot of the high school anime that I watch that it just is like all of these tropes coming together to make like you said, the highest grossing anime. It just feels to me that it like combined all these elements from a bunch of different ones on top of, like we were saying, the gorgeous animation. Like, the animation is so beautiful. You could stop any shot of this movie and like print it out and have a poster of it. It's just so beautiful.
As a member of LA Film Critics, I was really excited that we gave it Best Animated Feature that year, especially because like it hadn't really opened yet. Like, it had a 1 week sort of awards qualifying run and it kind of sort of snuck up on us. But enough people in the group who I trusted were like, you drop everything and watch this movie. And enough of us did. We were like, yes, you are right. You know, so like I'm glad to have been part of whatever tiny push that provided. But one of the things that I really admire about the film, to touch on, you know, Danny was saying about the gender swapping, how there is the sort of farcical nature of it, but at the same time, it also kind of presents it as this notion of androgyny as a force for good, I guess, you know, like the guy manages to get the unattainable woman at work interested in him because, you know, when she is in his body, you know, he's able to express a more sort of feminine side. And then he, in her body, can be more forceful and like stand up for her at school when people are being a-holes or whatever. And so, I mean, you know, I this might be a complete stereotype. I feel like a lot of times in, you know, much of contemporary Japanese society, the gender roles are maybe a little more strictly prescribed, and this movie sort of making the case of like, if we can step out of that for a second, it's good for everybody.
Oh yeah, no, I hear you that one more, like 100%, especially because right now I've been watching an anime called Gintama, which it's a comedy anime that like really plays up on like common, like it so much references like Japanese culture and what goes on in it, because that like there's always like a paragraph explanation of what they're referencing,
and a
it
subtitle was very, and a footnote.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll be like, oh, let me pause. And what's been interesting about it is seeing like how strong gender roles are back there, because there's so many jokes about like of how like they were really, it's very odd, you know, premarital sex is still such a big thing. Like if someone is assumed to have had premarital sex, they like treat them like a slut. I'm in one of the largest hookup culture cities, and the idea of like marrying someone and, you know, not knowing how they are in bed is bizarre to me. But like it is like interesting to see that, and the like there's so many jokes about like acting like a boy, acting like a girl. So I do like this, and like I have friends in Japan, from Japan, who say LGBTQ stuff in Japan is like hush hush, like if you are like gay, like you can't really be out,
which
like
is
that.
Wild, because anime, especially the anime that we watch, is so queer. Like some of the most iconic characters are gender fluid, like Frieza, one of the most iconic villains in anime history, and we don't know. And that's, you know.
I want to do a quick plug. Sorry, my friend Graham Colbeans did a documentary called Queer Japan that has been making its way through the festival circuit. It's, I don't know when it's going to open now. It's got distribution lined up, but everything's crazy. But anyway, just throwing that out there. When it comes out, y'all totally need to see it, because there's definitely some very visible, very outspoken LGBTQ people living there.
I want to blast that. Yeah. So please, when it comes out, let me know, because sorry to cut you off, Danny. But, you know, me and Danny will understand this, too, because we're both like in the anime community. And when you have people there, they like to like put Japan on this pedestal.
Oh, yeah.
And they will ignore any type of homophobia or racism that might take place over there. And luckily for me, I have friends who live out, like my friend Pierce. We both worked at Disneyland. We were both like anime nerds. And he was like, I'm gonna live in Japan and teach English. And I said, me too. And he actually did it. And like he'll tell me stuff. He's like when they're like current prime minister, he's like, that's essentially our
so
Trump.
Wait,
he's
what, just what you're saying is some of your best friends live in Japan.
Some of my best friends live in Japan, and
so you
let
can
me tell
talk
you
about it.
Yeah, I could talk about it, but it's funny because it gives me a more grounded look, because it's just like any other place, you're only getting the best exported. So when you have somebody be like, look, I know you're liking this anime, but you need to know a couple of things about how it works out here. And it does kind of stink, you know.
Can I ask an anime question?
Because
I have a small, some knowledge, but not a ton. One of the things of your name that stood out to me, and that's both really confusing, Danny was talking before we started recording about how this movie was not what she was expecting, and there's so much fantasy and supernatural tied into this story that is both... it takes like for the first act of it, you're kind of acclimating to the rules of what they're going through, because it's this the body swapping is so, it has as most body swapping does, a supernatural entity around it. Is that kind of fantasy through line similar in a lot of anime?
I think Danny's going to chime in, but yeah, I feel like most anime, the first part of it is establishing the rules. so you know kind of what's going on, and then you get down the line and then they break the rules.
Well, Danny, what was it about this that was unexpected? Like, did you have an idea?
I thought it
was
going to just totally. I thought it was going to be a love story. I also thought it was going to have, like, to me, it came off as really queer, that it felt like she was falling in love with this woman. And so, in fact, when she was like, they're probably on their date right now, and she started to cry, I was like, she's in love. She likes this woman, and this woman likes her.
Yes. And I assume she has this whole thing. She's been seducing or helping him woo his coworker when she's in his body. And they do this big reveal of her saying like, oh, they must be on their date right now. I wish I was on that date. And I was like, damn, she's in love with the waitress.
Look,
this is so sad.
I remember in Freaky Friday, both of them, but the second one with Lindsay Lohan, when Chad Michael Murray fell in love with Jamie Lee Curtis. And it was really Lindsay Lohan. And I mean, iconic. So, but... yeah, that to me, but it's like, if he was saying is that they're not really allowed to acknowledge that for many reasons. We'll have people, you know, Iffy and I used to have a Dragon Ball Z podcast, and people get that so much toxic. I want to say it's Western too, a lot of Western.
Oh yeah,
people who are pretending that this is a part of their culture when it's not. It's a culture that they're borrowing. But anyways, we'll have people be like, DBZ is not gay. Like, get your homophobia out of here. And I'm like, well, who is Zarbon, sir? Explain Zarbon to me, yeah. And explain Ginyu Force to me, because those are definitely treading in that water.
Alonzo, yes. You're a professional homosexual.
I am.
Did you have any response to anything in your name that stood out to you in terms of, you read that scenario like we did? Or
I would love to hear what trans critics have to say about this. I did some Googling, and I found some people on message boards who were into it, but I don't know if there's any kind of consensus, or if there have been queer film critics who've written about it, or trans film critics. I mean, for me, when she says, I wish I were, when I come, in my next life, I want to be a handsome boy in Tokyo. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
You know,
and she cut her hair.
She cut her hair. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
But, it's like, how do you parse in a society where, like, you make sake out of saliva? Like, I mean, there's a lot of cultural barriers. And I'm like, okay, I guess that's a thing. Is it a thing? I don't even know.
Yeah.
But going back to what I think Iffy's original question about, why is this movie such a global hit? I suspect that it's one of those things where, like, I've heard people say, oh, well, Parasite is about these very specific, you know, elements of South Korean society. It's like, that may well be, but it is also telling a story that is broad enough that if you don't know those things, you can still respond to what the movie's about. And I think the same thing with your name. Even if you are not steeped in, like, anime tropes of high school romance or gender swapping or any of that stuff, I think there is something about it. It's one of those, like, you know, it is a Romeo and Juliet story in terms of there being the one person, and also there being the person that it is impossible to get to, that, like, you are literally only with them when you are inside them, and then that means they're not there, you know. And obviously there's more roadblocks to the relationship that come up as it goes along. So I mean, just as a queer viewer, though, I think, you know, I think that this movie is saying some interesting things about the notion of gender, the limitations of gender. But, you know, I think that it's doing so with a very light touch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I was doing some light research, and yeah, I that always went by me, and I just thought that was like, oh, just anime thing. But no, it's an actual cultural thing that they used to do, where you had to be a virginal girl, and they would make sake out of your saliva. It seems like it's kind of like they don't really do it. Like, some islands do it, like, for religious rituals, mm-hmm. but for the most part, it's out of the flow. But you can imagine that
well, in the context, they leave it Reddit at a shrine, and he wasn't supposed to drink it, and when she finds out he did, she's horrified.
Yeah. People are asking where to buy it on Reddit, though.
No.
So so
wow. Hit me up. I'm just kidding.
Can we vote on this?
Yeah, I was just gonna say, let's get a vote.
Voting's my thing.
Let's get a vote. Let's knock it out. So the way we're voting now that we're all in the teen is, would you stream it over Google Hangouts, or let's say Netflix Watch Party, stream it sure. by yourself, or skip it? We'll let Danny, you'll start off as the guest. What is your review?
I would definitely do the Netflix party, because I think it would be great to have a friend to talk this out with, because there were definite times when I was confused out of my mind. And I'm not always great with, like, keeping up with time skips and whatnot, but it really took a twist. So I think that would be fun to watch it with friends who can, like, also be shocked and or enlighten you.
Ooh. What about you, Drea?
I am also a view this over a Netflix party. I think that at any time this would be a charming and immersive view, but, like, right now, when I went back to it even with the, yeah, no, it was just, it's so beautiful to watch. It has this incredible music. It's light, but has, you know, something your brain can chew on. And yeah, I think this is a great view for right now.
Ooh, what about you, Alonzo? What are your thoughts?
Oh, totally Netflix party. I wish it were on Netflix, but, you know, yeah. And I agree. It is a movie that welcomes, you know, discussion and analysis. I think this was like the fourth time I've seen it, and I'm still like picking up a little, oh, that's why the thing and the later, and that's going to come up. And so, like, yeah, it is a movie that even in repeat viewings, I think is constantly sort of revealing ideas and kind of making the plot seem a little, you know, I mean, not that it's not coherent, but that it just sort of like these avenues by which you sort of understand the very specific vibe that it's creating. But yeah, it's gorgeous. We didn't mention, yeah, Rad Wimps, who did the music. These are great songs.
If you want to know my review, I just realized I didn't own it, and I just bought the Blu-ray on Amazon.
Nice.
So take that for what you... I'm trying to make Alonzo proud. But yeah, so yeah, my review is stream it over Netflix Watch Party, Google Hangouts, talk about it with your friends. But we'll be back after we hear from another show from Maximum Fun.
I'm Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
And together, we host a podcast called Still Buffering, where we answer questions like,
why should I not fall asleep first at a slumber party?
How do I be fleek?
Is it okay to break up with someone using emojis?
And sometimes we talk about bugs.
No, we don't. Nope.
Find out the answers to these important questions and many more on Still Buffering, a sister's guide to teens through the ages.
I am a teenager.
And I was too.
Butts, 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 butts.
No. Will you change your mind? For 2 minutes time. Over and over again. Over and over again.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe, in the virtual stew with me are
Alonzo Duraldi,
Danny Fernandez,
Drea Clark.
Now it's time to answer a call from the Who Shot line, all right? So, Casey, play that call.
Hey, guys. This is Alicia calling from Washington, D.C. There are so many great films about the effects of isolation or semi-isolation on different people. And given that most of us are facing this in some capacity right now due to coronavirus, I'm wondering which character from one of these isolation-focused films do each of you connect with most these days? Maybe it's L.B. Jeffries from Rear Window or Aaron Ralston from 127 Hours. Hopefully it's not Jack Torrance. Thanks so much for answering the question and for the show. I hope everybody is happy and healthy and holding up okay during these crazy times. Bye.
This is a phenomenal question.
Danny, what do you got?
Oh, my gosh. Well, if he knows, I'm a huge Jimmy Stewart stan. Like, I love him. I do like a dumbass like Clarence, I want to live It's a Wonderful Life every year, so I would say Rear Window. However, I really feel like one of my favorite episodes of The Twilight Zone. Oh wait, that's a show, so you know what, I'm gonna stay. I do want to say, however,
Burgess,
if you
want to
watch an isolation, no, I was gonna go with Midnight Sun. When Earth falls out of orbit and is moving closer to the sun, she is isolated in her apartment trying to paint. It's great. Highly recommend. However, I'm going to stick with Jimmy Stewart. My fan. I mean, I really do. Go back and watch that film. It's so... My dog is actually... I pretend that she's rear windowing because all she does is stare at people out the window and she'll bark at them. She'll be like, get indoors. What are you doing out here? She just like... That's what I imagine. She's screaming at everybody as they walk by. But she is such a perv just watching everybody.
I have a Rear Window fun fact. Do you know who the guy playing the piano is?
No.
Ross Bagdasarian, better known as Dave Seville of Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Wow.
Oh, that is a fun fact.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mine is Well, I've been making a constant reference how I feel like I live on Mars right now because I am self-isolating, so I haven't seen anybody in over a month, which means I'm talking out loud to, like, both my cats, but also, like, my food processor, the faucet. So I, the Martian and Matt Damon in that, in terms of, I think I'm, like, another month away from maybe trying to make a garden in my living room out of, like, cat feces and, I don't know, dust. But yeah, so that sort of, ooh, ingenuity, but also I might be losing it. But the other one that came to mind was Theodore in Her, the Spike Jonze film, where Joaquin Phoenix is falling in love with his operating system, voiced by Scarlett Johansson, because I spend a lot of time, all my time, on my phone or laptop now. Like, anyone that's like, thinking back to a couple months ago when, you should take some time away from your electronics. And now I'm like, you will take these out of my cold, dead hands because I am in love. This is it. This is what I got, this phone here. So, yeah, that's I'm splitting the difference between those two. Maybe a little Kevin McAllister on top, but mostly those two. What about you guys?
I mean, you know, like I, you know, luckily I am espoused, so I'm not completely alone. But I'd say in my darker moments, I feel a lot like Brie Larson in Room, where I just want to like say hi to the windows. But I think more the three adaptations of I Am Legend. Vincent Price in The Last Man on Earth, Charlton Heston in The Omega Man, and Will Smith in I Am Legend, mainly because those guys all found time to watch movies. and if I were Will Smith, I would totally set up a video store with like people in it that I could argue with and like, you know, flirt with.
All right. So I finally came up with my movie pick, which is Seamus O'Grady. You know Seamus O'Grady, famed character. Seamus O'Grady, played by Justin Theroux. Seamus
O'Grady. Oh my God, that's what I was thinking. I'm like, are you referencing Charlie's Angels right now?
Full Throttle. Yes, I am. When Justin Theroux appears and is shredded because he's been getting it in the gym. You didn't think I'd find another fit boy? Yeah.
This we're talking is also Seamus a O'Grady. Very Max Cady in Cape Fear. It's the same dude's getting ripped in prison isolation. That's telling, my man.
Speaking of getting shredded.
That was a very good question, by the way. Yes. Thank you to the caller. Yeah,
that was a solid question, keeping us, you know, positive.
With good references yourself. Yeah.
I know. Deep cut. You know, I'm always coming with the deep cut, always referencing the classics. So thank you to everyone who's called in. The number for the Who Shot line is WSY-803-1664. Now it's time for our staff picks. Danny, why don't you start?
Ooh, I guess with horror, I should stick in horror. And something that I think a lot of people passed or like missed when it came out was I'm the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House. It's on Netflix, so you can watch it on there. It is so creepy and haunting and a slow burn and just really uncomfortable. Not necessarily that it shows anything gory at all. It's just like captures ghost qualities so well in a way that it's like you want them to turn the camera away and they refuse. And it's just like so creepy, like the way that the frame is caught and it's almost like you're catching a ghost that's walking by. I actually really enjoyed it. I know there was a lot of mixed reviews about it, but just if you're someone that enjoys horror or is trying to write or make your own horror, I think this is a great time. I also rewatched Paranormal Activity and I'm like, oh wow, they could literally shoot this in quarantine for like no budget in your house. They never leave their house. So yeah. I'm like, wow, you could make your own $1 million movie. make your own King Lear.
Loved Gretel and Hansel, so I've been meaning to catch up on my Oz Perkins. So that's good to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's got such a good eye. My staff pick is a total different direction, but I was thinking of, as someone who lives here on Mars, that what would I really like? Oh, I'd really like to be like out, except for, you know, I need to have my phone with me, but out exploring the wilderness and then maybe have a very funny, chubby sidekick. Oh, Hunt for the Wilder People. Taika Waititi's film from 2016. I love this movie. I've recommended it to so many people. It's currently on Hulu. It is Sam Neill. Sam Neill. I was like, I really wanted to make him Irish. Sorry. Sam Neill and Julian Dennison and Taika Waititi wrote and directed it. And it's about, you know, this older man and this younger kid who's a foster kid, and they go into the woods and hijinks ensues. And it's so charming. It's so funny and beautiful and shot in New Zealand and has quirky little side characters and is just a great escapist little romp for right now.
Ooh. Mine is kind of multimedia. There is this great Japanese manga called My Brother's Husband, and it is it's from Gengoro Tagame, who was mainly known for much more sort of explicitly erotic gay cartooning, but this is a family friendly piece. It's about a guy in Japan and his twin brother, who is dead, had moved to Canada and was married to a man, and his brother's husband is coming to visit. And it's about the sort of awkward, you know, but growing kind of familial relationship between the brothers-in-law and then also between the Canadian visitor and his late brother, this gets complicated. The relationship between the Canadian guy and the daughter of the surviving brother and how they bond. And it's really sweet. And there's two volumes of it. And actually, it was adapted for Japanese television. And with very little Googling, you can find a way to watch it in the United States in a way that does not seem illegal, but it just, you know, like it's never been released technically, but that's pretty much all I'll say. Anyway, the show is also lovely and does a really good job adapting it. And so there is some queer media coming out of Japan, and that is one of them. I highly recommend My Brother's Husband, both on the page and on the screen.
Yeah, in regards to Alonzo's tips on watching it, welcome to the world of being an anime fan. Even though it was one little part that I did not like about it, I am going to talk my staff pick. It's coming out. You can pre-order it now. I already have. It's called Pro Mare. It was a movie that came out in 2019. But it was directed by Hiroyuki Imaishi and Kazuki Nakashima, who both worked together to make Gurren Lagann and Kill la Kill. And it is also being co-produced by Studio Trigger, which has done who did Kill la Kill and Darling in the Franxx. So it's a anime film, so you don't have to invest in a multiple episodes. It's coming out. It looks gorgeous. If you've seen any of the way that any of those anime look, you'll love it. It's going to be hyper anime robots, all of that good stuff. And I have it coming to me in May. We're done with that. We got to move, but we have some big news this week. We've got a Jumbotron.
What? Oh, dig, dig.
Fwe, fwe, fwe.
Fwe, fwe, indeed. I am ready for this.
Okay. All right. Check out the Green Screen Podcast on iTunes or your pod catcher of choice. Cinema reflects on our fears, hopes, deep truths, and misunderstandings of the environment. On the Green Screen Podcast, Sean, a historian, and his husband, Cody, a movie nerd, dig into surprising films to find out how we view our environment and express it in film. We aren't just talking about Silkwood. We mean fun movies like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Star Trek IV, The French Connection, and The Empire Strikes Back. With Iffy's help, maybe Cody can talk Sean into covering Space Jam. Azúcar! Yeah, go ahead and do Space Jam. Because I'd say Space Jam is your cultural appropriation episode, because that's what that movie was about.
Oh my God. I love historians and their movie nerd husbands.
Oh, I know. You know, you have no choice but to stand. Okay, so make sure you check out the Green Screen Podcast like Cody and Sean has asked you to, and leave Space Jam in the comments of their posts so they can cover it. So if you like that and you're like, damn, that'd be tight for my like hentai podcast or something, go and get a Jumbotron to promote something or have us call out your friend. Head on over to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Now it's time for 5-star reviews. If you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we'll read it on air. This is from Waking Straight White Guy. These guys are food for my soul. This show covers movies I care about with a smart, diverse, and hilarious panel of people. Drea is my plain bagel filled with a moat of cream cheese. Alonzo is my Swedish mac, and Iffy is my perfectly cooked steak. Apologies to my vegan friends. I look forward to this show dropping into my feed every week. Love you guys. I like that I get to be the beefy
Those
steak. I'm a big juicy guy.
Swedish mac also food. Has ground beef, but thank you, waking straight white guy.
Those are great food callbacks for us as well.
Yeah, I know. I agree. I agree, and I love it. Danny, thank you so much for joining us, my friend, my confidant. Anything you'd like us to plug?
Follow me on all my social medias because I need extra validation right now since I can't get it in physical form. That's at Ms. Danny Fernandez. It's MSDANIFERNANDEZ, not to be confused with this like Spanish boy band singer, which I'm trying to be more famous than so I can just claim my name officially, not even kidding. Of course, yeah, Iffy and I have a nerdy podcast where we talk about all nerdy shit, Nerdificent. And yeah, I don't know. My projects will come out eventually in 2021. So just follow me when I get to actually share them.
Definitely can relate. Again, the number for the Who Shot line is WSY-803-1664. Make your quarantine activity. Call in. Call into the Who Shot line. And if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at Who Shot Your Pod. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYourPodcast, or send us an email at WhoShotYou@MaximumFun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.